You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
There's that sound, the sound of the start of another edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning. It's the Saturday edition. I'm Mike Blewett. I'll be your host for the next 2 hours, along with George Kurtz and Matt Modica. There are certain days in the fantasy community, and for those of you listening and for those of us doing these shows, that you got a little extra juice. Today is one of those days. Sometimes the content is written by the other people in this industry, or the people with whom we watch every day. And last night, obviously, a massive story out of the NFL, where Jeremy Maclin, a leading receiver for the past number of years and a huge Chiefs acquisition just a couple of years ago, was released by Kansas City. So we're going to talk about that a lot today. It's going to be sort of a football show to start it, because I think that's big news. Obviously, we have some baseball news as well. But, George, I'm going to throw it to you first just to get your initial reaction on the Maclin release by the Chiefs.
I don't know how massive I'd call this. I mean, it's just Jeremy Maclin. I mean, he's a solid wide receiver three for fantasy. It's the Kansas City offense. So I think it's more interesting where he ends up than Kansas City releasing him. They needed salary cap space. They did try and trade him, according to all things, but that never works out in the NFL all that much. But we're talking about a guy who, you know, has only had over 1,000 yards receiving twice in his career, and once that was 1,088. So we're not talking about a Dez Bryant, A.J. Green guy here who's fantastic. We're talking a nice, solid possession receiver. He'll hook up with somebody, but I don't think he's going to make a major difference for anyone.
Matt, your initial thoughts on the Maclin release?
I was just more surprised that they had to know this was coming and that they didn't draft wide receivers early. I think they drafted somebody in the fourth round, an obscure name. I forget who it was. But, I mean, Jeremy Maclin last season was 70th in points scored for wide receivers in PPR. I mean, behind Cordell Patterson, Brian Quick, Robbie Anderson. I know he did miss a handful of games, but, you know, it is what it is. An interesting stat here that I got off of Twitter. In 2014 and 2015, Maclin had 18 touchdowns and 2 drops. In 2016, he had 2 touchdowns and 7 drops.
Yeah, there's a lot to break down. I probably disagree slightly with George. I know he's not an elite receiver, but there's a lot of numbers to indicate that he could be a very valuable piece outside of Kansas City. We're going to take a look at that this morning to figure out what some of those landing spots may be. One piece of baseball news, only because it's significant, Clayton Kershaw becomes the third youngest player ever to reach 2,000 strikeouts in his career. Matt, do you know who the two guys were that beat him to that pace?
Pedro did it at an insane rate, and Randy Johnson.
That's right. Pedro, 1,715 and a third innings, and Randy Johnson, 1,734 innings. Kershaw took about 100 innings longer, 1,836. He's the fifth youngest player to reach that mark. The amazing part about that game, 26 strikeouts by the Brewers to match the Dodgers 16. If I told you the Dodgers struck out 16 times, you'd say, geez, that's a terrible night. Well, the Brewers blew them away. 26 strikeouts. Canley Jansen putting on an incredible show this season. Talk about that a little bit. It's going to be the Jeremy Maclin for the next segment. Matt, Mike, and George back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for joining us on this Saturday morning. Mike Blewett along with Matt Modica and George Kurtz. You can hit us up today on Twitter, and please do. Discussion is going to be wide-ranging about Jeremy Maclin. We're going to talk George's closer report later today. We got injuries to update you on. Gene Segura yet again, guys. Not really thrilled about that.
No bueno.
No bueno is right. And it seems, from the initial reports, it seems like it could be more than 10 days for sure. So a little bit on Twitter. Hit us up on Twitter at Fantasy Sports Radio. That's at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. George is at George Kurtz. Matt Modica is at CTM Baseball. Give us a call today in case you're a Maclin owner. In case you want to talk about baseball, that's fine. 844-843-6879. And as we get to George's closer report later, I will tell you that you can get information like that in the exclusive Edge in-season fantasy baseball package. We're currently putting together our football draft package, or exclusive Edge draft package. I'm working on a couple of things. George is working on a couple of things for sure. So stay ahead of the pack with our in-depth statistical breakdowns, trend analysis, and player insights. Become a waiver wizard and learn how to scan the numbers like a roto scientist. We'll help you set your ideal lineups, figure out how the hell to navigate all these injuries with the training staff with our new injury advisor powered by InsideInjuries.com. So go to rotoexperts.com, enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for a special discount, and you'll get tons of good information, which we review here every week. Saturdays we do the closer reports. Sundays we do who's hot, who's not, which George releases every Friday. The closer report comes out every Tuesday. So a little bit of business there. Back to Macklin, guys. So Andy Reid was at his wedding a couple of weeks ago and they're pretty tight. I can tell you that the Chiefs, Andy Reid really wanted him so badly that the Chiefs were forced to forfeit their third round pick in the 2016 draft and the seventh round pick in the 2017 draft after they got him in free agency in 2015. Now, as George said, or as Matt said, his 44 catches last year, career low, as were his 536 yards and 12 games played. But here's what I'll say. His PPR ranks throughout his career. Last year, as Matt said, he's beyond 70. He was injured, though. He missed five games. 2015, he was 15th. 2014, he was 9th. 2013, he missed the season with a torn ACL. 2012, he was 23rd. 2011, he was 31st. 2010, he was 15th. And as a rookie in 2009, he was 35th. So every season that he's played, other than last year, which was a partial season, he's been at worst a wide receiver 3, and in some cases is a wide receiver 1 or really close to it. So I actually think he's been a very valuable receiver. I cleaned up with Jeremy Maclin the two of the last 3 years in drafting him ahead of other people. So, Matt, I'll throw it to you first. Do you think that this is a situation where, you know, they've surveyed the landscape, they got Tyreek Hill, they got Travis Kelce, and they're not going to pay an aging wide receiver $10 million a year? Is that just the long and the short of it?
I'm going to have to go that route. I don't think Maclin is useless. I think he has a role this season. I think he can help teams out. I mean, I would love to see him on the Bills as a Bills fan, you know, just deep in that wide receiver core. I mean, I love Watkins. We all know that. I'm excited about the kid they drafted, Zay Jones, but a proven veteran like Maclin. The one thing is that the system he was in did not help his game. I mean, Alex Smith is just not that guy. I know he did get 124 targets his first season in Kansas City, but I mean, we've just seen Alex Smith's reluctance to throw the ball down the field.
George, Maclin killed it in Kansas City 2 years ago. 87 from 1,008 yards and 8 touchdowns. Don't you think that you're underselling him a little bit?
No. Once again, even with Philadelphia, he only had over 1,000 yards once. And by the way, 1,088 yards is not killing it in the NFL, especially not in this day and age. What made his value was the touchdowns. You know, he had two great years, the 85 catches in 14, 87 in 15. But he also had 10 and 8 touchdowns those years. That's really where his value came from as far as fantasy leagues are concerned. We all know touchdowns are very finicky. And wherever he ends up now, we don't know when he's going to sign. It may not be the training camp, which means he's not going to have much of a time to spend in a new system, how much chemistry he has with the quarterback. How many teams out there, now you're talking, we don't want him to end up with an Alex Smith type. How many good teams need a wide receiver right now where he might end up signing with?
So it's actually a good transition. I still don't think we're on the same page. I think the fact that he finished ninth in 2015 was well above projections. I'm not suggesting he's Julio or Odell or AJ or even Mike Evans, but I still think there's some gas left in the tank for a team. And this is one of the things I wanted to sort of try to figure out. Now, Matt is saying the Bills as a possible landing spot. I think it would be a fit and an asset, but I don't know that he would have a huge fantasy season, and the Bills aren't exactly free in the cap. They only have $9 million in cap space. That would eat up more than that on his own. You know, a team that I was looking at, a team that could probably bolster the depth at their wide receiving core, is somebody like the Panthers, simply because Obviously, they made a couple additions in the offseason, which are cheap, in McCaffrey and Curtis Samuel. You can't really count on rookies to contribute in the passing game right away. I don't know about you guys, but I think while I'm not done with the Devin Funchess experiment, I know that Jeremy Maclin would be a much bigger asset to add to Kelvin Benjamin and Greg Olsen. They have about $15, $16 million of cap space. You'd probably have to move a few things around, and it also is going to be dependent if Maclin can receive some sort of a long-term deal. I'm sure that that's what he'll be shopping for. It's not like he's 35. He's only 29. So Panthers were a team that jumped out to me that have some space that can maybe move things around and possibly take their offense to another level. George, I don't know if you had any thoughts.
I don't see that at this point. I know he's going to take it on offense to a new level because it's Jeremy Maclin. I think you're always selling him big time. This is not a number one wide receiver. And he's going to be miscast as that. All right, that being said, I think the Panthers do make sense. They certainly could use help with the wide receiver core. But that's also not a team built on a big-time passing game. We've seen Cam Newton. He's another guy I think is oversold as a quarterback. He had one good year, even though his completion percentage really wasn't all that great. I'm talking about fantasy-wise, not really NFL-wise. But that one year, it was because his touchdown doubled from what he normally does. And if he doesn't throw touchdowns, Cam Newton isn't as valuable. And if Cam Newton's not running as much now, that could take away some of his value. I think it's going to be smart and try and keep his head away from the goal line. I said, I think Maclin has more NFL value than fantasy value here. I think he could open up some, depending on where he ends up, which I think is going to be extremely interesting, he could open up some for the opposite receiver or maybe the tight end to help the passing game. But then he's going to come into a new offense in June, July, August. We don't know when he's going to sign. You mentioned he's going to want a decent-sized contract. How many teams have cap room that, at this point in time, need a top wide receiver? You know, the Cowboys just got $14 million yesterday for Tony Romo, but they're not going to sign Maclin to a big deal. That's not going to happen. Yeah, it's going to be very tricky to see where he ends up.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, Matt, some of the teams with the cap space are teams that aren't really going to be going out and getting Jeremy Maclin. The one thing I do agree with George on, he's not a transformative player, right? He's not going to take a Midland or struggling offense and transform it into something powerful. So the teams with the most cap room, unfortunately, are the Niners, $71 million left, which is a huge number. The Browns, $57 million. The Titans, $46 million. I don't see that happening simply because they went out and spent the number 5 overall pick, Corey Davis. They obviously had success with Rishard Matthews. They've had some other pieces there. It could work as Corey Davis sort of learns the playbook, but I don't necessarily see that as something that they're going to do. They have a lot of young players in that wide receiver core. The Jaguars, the Raiders, the Texans, the Bears, the Bucks, the Patriots, the Bengals. Those are all teams with $20 million roughly or more.
Well, I mean, I would think the Bears, but I think first thing is, I think Maclin may have to take like a one-year deal here. I don't think he's getting some, you know, multi-year blockbuster deal in any realm right now. He's going to have to maybe take the one-year deal, rebuild his stock, and then going into the offseason. I think the Bears might be a team that he could really help. You know, you got Cam Meredith. You plug him in. You got Mike Glennon. He's going to need the weapons. And, you know, the thing with the Bears for me is I don't want to see Mitchell Trubisky. That's why I'm a little hesitant on Jordan Howard.
I actually think Maclin will have enough suitors that he won't have to pick the Bears, right? Now, if the money is on the table, so be it. I don't think you're wrong. I think there are possibilities under which Jeremy Maclin is going to be offered one-year deals from people, full guarantees. It could be even as high as $12 million for 1 year. Just prove it, and that the team can get out of it in that 1 year. That being said, I think there'll be enough teams that he won't have to pick the Bears. But you know what? The Bears are the team that came through.
Poor Bears.
Yeah, if the Bears came through with the deal and multiple years, then maybe that's something. But here's their wide receiving core right now. Cam Meredith, Kevin White, Marcus Wheaton, Reuben Randall, Kendall Wright, Deontay Thompson, Victor Cruz signed there, Josh Bellamy. A couple of those guys aren't going to make the team. So conceivably, Maclin is a fit. We'll continue to talk about that. News about Dennis Pitta. Wanted to look into that a little bit. What's going to happen with the Ravens tight end situation? I'm so surprised by the Maclin thing. George, kind of nonplussed about Jeremy Maclin. I think he's a better player than that. So it'll be Mike, Matt, and George back after this to talk a little bit more about the NFL. back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike, Matt, and George. Hopefully you're listening to us on the app, because you can take the world's premier 24/7 Fantasy Sports Radio Network with you wherever you go. Download the FNTSY Sports Radio app in the iTunes Store, on Google Play, and listen for free anytime, anywhere. Get the Fantasy Sports Radio app for free right now in the iTunes Store, on Google Play, and take the experts with you. So, you know, I did think it was kind of funny that Andy Reid was at his wedding a couple of weeks ago, but such is the nature of the NFL, right? They do seem to have a really unusually kind of close relationship. He really worked hard to get him from Philly. Yeah, from Philly over to Kansas City. I guess he obviously had to have told him. People are stating or seem to be implying that Macklin was shocked based on a tweet that he sent out. He may have been shocked, but I don't think it was like he found out on Twitter or he had, you know. I think ultimately they made a decision where the Chiefs, to be fair, the one thing that we didn't analyze or we didn't take a look at is the Chiefs really are very capped out. They are one of the teams with the least cap space in the entire league. So they may be worried as they get closer to training camp and an injury happens and they need to sign somebody that they're going to be in trouble. Based on their depth chart at receiver, they currently have Tyreek Hill, who obviously burst onto the scene last year. He had numbers that were comparable or better than Macklin's. Granted, Macklin injured. Beyond that, they have Chris Conley, who was a third-round draft pick in 2015. He hasn't done much yet, but his numbers were comparable to Macklin's last year. They obviously have a very dynamic tight end in Travis Kelce. They added yet another running back. You stated earlier, Matt, about Alex Smith. Yeah, I think part of it is that they must feel like spending all this money on a receiving core on a quarterback that doesn't throw the ball downfield is probably just and a luxury that they don't need, frankly.
Yeah, but it does put, a lot of pressure on Tyreek Hill now. I mean, everybody wants to see him get the ball more. He's an explosive player. A fascinating player to watch, but I don't see him as a true number one. He's not just a gadget player. He's better than that, but I think he's somebody that excels better if you have a true number one and you allow him to do other things.
George, their number one seems to play tight end, though. Isn't that their case?
Yeah, that's the way it's going to continue to be. During the break, I wrote down a whole bunch of teams that could use a wide receiver that I think Macklin could end up. And, you know, Casey might be number one on that list, so it's just strange that they would let him go. I understand you need the cap room, but, I mean, aren't you playing for a title, right? We think Casey, I don't think they're better than New England. Don't think they're better than Oakland, but they always beat the Raiders. But they're still one of the top three, four teams in the AFC. Maybe we'll throw Pittsburgh in there. That's about it. Maybe Denver. So to release your number one wide receiver, regardless of what I think about him, he was still your number one wide receiver. He still was productive, knew the offense, and you don't have ready-made players available to replace him. I understand you needed the cap room. You must have needed it real badly to make this move.
Yeah. On a surface level, like I said, it does seem like perhaps it was a luxurious salary to carry, but they were technically still under the cap only by $2 million. And they did weaken their offense today. I don't think there's any question. They didn't strengthen it by moving Tyreek Hill or Chris Conley into that role. He was out there in OTAs. He was injured last year, but there's no indication that there's anything wrong with him or that he's suffering from ill effects from the injury from last year. I mean, he came back from the injury last year. So in any event, I did find that to be altogether, I found that to be the most shocking piece. You know, moving on to another piece of NFL news, and we can continue to talk about Macklin and where he might end up. Well, George, you said you jotted down a few teams. You had Chiefs the first on that list. What are some other names that you put down there?
Well, a bunch of some of them we went over again. How about Detroit? I mean, well, couldn't they use a Macklin opposite? I mean, I know.
I think that's a great spot, George.
Yeah, Minnesota, I think, is an option, but probably not. I think they'll live with Thielen and Diggs there.
Minnesota was one of the ones that it was in my head, too, yesterday, actually. They have $15 million left under the cap, so it's certainly a possibility. But as you said, I think they're going to live with what they have with Diggs and Thielen.
I think for fantasy value, Detroit would be a really nice landing spot. You know, a team that throws the ball a lot. I don't see that changing this season. And, you know, you have Golden Tate, who's going to get his, and he's going to be that guy. But I think Macklin would, Matthew Stafford would
really
be.
They just spent money on Marvin Jones, though. That's the only problem
yeah.
they're going to have with that.
I hear
but it's still a pass heavy. I agree with you. He's not going there. But I think that would, like Matt said, I think that'd be great for fantasy if he did.
Yes.
The Jets certainly need a wide receiver, but they're going on a youth move. With their right. And I don't think there's any way on earth that Macklin signs there anyway.
That's right.
If the Cleveland Browns were to sign Macklin, especially if it was more than 1 year, $8 million, I would probably have a coronary after they let
Terrell
Pryor go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would kill me. It would absolutely kill me if he went to Cleveland.
Yeah. That would not make any sense. But they could use him. Look, that receiving core, it needs a lot of upgrades. They may have plenty of young guys, but none of them – inspire any confidence. Obviously, Corey Coleman has showed flashes, but he's currently hurt. They signed Kenny Britt for big money, which is why I don't think Macklin gets added there. The other guys in the depth chart are Rashard Higgins, Ricardo Lewis, Jordan Payton, Mario Alford, Roderick Johnson they drafted in the fifth round. They're not adding him. I mean, it's just not even a possibility simply because they don't even know who the quarterback is. You can't add guys like that when you don't even know who the quarterback's going to be or if you're likely to have multiple quarterbacks throughout the year. So, yeah.
How about Baltimore?
Baltimore could definitely use him.
I do like it as an option. As far as their cap space, I'm just checking right now. Yeah, they got problems. So they're $4 million left under the cap. That doesn't
work.
So he's
not going there.
They'd have to cut other guys in order to do it. But it actually does make a transition into the next topic I was going to talk about, and that was Dennis Pitta. So unfortunately, Dennis Pitta suffered another kind of devastating hip injury, his third such injury to his hip. I think it is widely assumed, rightfully so, that this will lead to his retirement. It would be difficult to come back from a third hip injury, if not impossible. He actually led the league in receptions last year by tight ends, to those people keeping track. He had 86 catches for 729 yards and two touchdowns. He's back in the pack a little bit for fantasy tight ends, but he had a huge year by considering the expectations that were upon him. So it's really unfortunate. He seemed to be a guy that was a huge fan, had a huge fan base in Baltimore, and teammates really loved him. I know he was tight with Flacco, so an unfortunate situation here for Dennis Pitta, George.
Yeah, that's terrible. I mean, but once again, I think it's sort of the gods telling you it's time to end it. Your third hip injury, third major hip injury. Listen, not everybody's body's built for football. It's time to go for Pitta. He had a great comeback season last year. But it's not going to work out. Fantasy-wise, he wasn't going in top 12 anyway this season. Not that we expect the big things from him. But I do expect, like you said, Mike, I expect his career to be over.
Yeah. Matt, we have an issue now in Baltimore in that we don't really have a tight end that we can necessarily count on. It was Dennis Pitta's job in some ways. Crockett, Gilmore, Ben Watson, an aging tight end coming off an injury, Max Williams, a second round draft pick from a couple of years ago, and Nick Boyle, Darren Waller, like led the team in returning tight ends and receptions with like eight catches total. So is this Ben Watson stepping back into this role if he can stay healthy? What happens here?
I mean, I got to bet on Ben Watson, but I mean, like, Dennis Pitta had 121 targets last year, third for tight ends. But like you said, he only had the 729 yards. I got to bet on Ben Watson here. There is so many targets available in Baltimore. It makes you have to really kind of like Mike Wallace, even if you don't like Mike Wallace. Makes me happy that I did take Danny Woodhead in the sixth round. I think he's going to get even more. He just needs to stay healthy. He needs to stay on the field. If he can do that, I think he's going to be a monster in PPR. I mean, Flacco is captain check down. And now with his boy Pitta gone, I think that's just more for Woodhead. And even when, what's his name, comes back from his suspension, I think both running backs can live in that world.
George, we got a lot of guys here that don't on this Baltimore Ravens depth chart that honestly you can't really count on. Just talked about Ben Watson. You got Breshad Perriman and Mike Wallace are the starting wide receivers. You know, what do we do here? They added Danny Woodhead, who's the only guy that anybody really likes in this entire depth chart of this offense. So how does this change things?
How does it change things? Well, it's not good. I mean, I think Pettit was sort of Flacco's security blanket, you know, safety blanket, where you'd like to see him over the middle. Chad Henne called, man. He wants his nickname back, Captain Chetstown. That's accurate for Flacco, too. I mean, Flacco throws a great deep ball, just doesn't have receivers to get it to. So the more and more I think of it, I mean, Flacco makes some sense here, although I don't know if they'll go that direction, but I think Macklin would make some sense here to give him some more options, especially now that Pitt is out. I think Watson will be the tight end, yay. Won't be somebody drafted here. But the offense has been pass deficient for a while. Steve Smith left, and he was ancient, yet he was their best receiver. Wasn't even close. You know, so Mike Wallace, I guess he's your deep guy, too. Either way, I'm not liking this offense at all.
I mean, real quick, Wallace seems, as much as nobody really likes him, he does seem to finish in the top 25 almost every year. So, I mean, just to take with that, like George says, he does throw a really good deep ball, and that's Mike Wallace's specialty.
I mean, a really solid season last year. Unfortunately, he only scored one touchdown after week two all year. He had two 100-yard games. There was just a lot of Midland games down the stretch. After their bye week, he had a good week against Pittsburgh. And then it was 4, 5, 3, 6 catches, 5, 2, 4, and 4. It just wasn't a lot of consistent production there. But if you got him as a depth wide receiver, you're probably okay with him in a PPR league. Come back. We'll talk a little bit about a mock draft that George and I are in. That thing's creeping along. It's Mike, Matt, and George back after this. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I usually let the bass drop here, but whatever. I got a lot to talk about. So two things I neglected to mention in the previous segments. Regarding the Ravens tight end situation, Gary Barnage is actually still available as a free agent, guys. So I actually think that if they are weary of Ben Watson and they realize that all the guys that they drafted and added over these last several years aren't going to work for them, maybe they move to a veteran presence there. Gary Barnage wouldn't be terribly expensive. I think he'd be somebody to bolster that tight end core, but maybe Gary Barnage will have other options. He's still a guy that, look, I don't think he's a fantasy superstar, but we saw him a couple of years ago where he crushed it kind of out of nowhere. I think he'd obviously be a good addition,
Matt. I think he's a great fit for the Ravens. I think he's a good player. I would kind of like him on the Bills because, I mean, Charles Clay, I don't think those knees are ever going to hold up, and I think they need a guy like that. I think he's very good in the red zone as well. So, I mean, for the Ravens, losing a guy like Pitter, a guy like Barnage, I think is a nice guy to step right in there. But, you know, I think, like you said, he does have other options, and I'm hoping it's in Buffalo.
George, there's a theme here. Every player that we mention, Matt likes as a fit for the Bills.
Well, look at the Bills' pass.
This team is $8 million under the cap. How are they so bad? They can't even afford to add anybody. You want everybody. Barnage.
I will say one thing. I still believe Macklin's signing a one-year deal here. I really do believe that. And I don't think it's going to be a lot of money right now. But I was really, what's the word I'm looking for? I felt really good after I read something yesterday about how they broke down the Bills' new front office and their new GM, how he basically gutted it and has built up a really good organization. He got some really good people from some teams. So for the first time in a long time, I'm kind of excited as a Bills fan.
Well, that's good. That's good news. And they needed to do that. You know, sometimes you got to clean house. I know the Colts are another team that kind of cleaned house on their entire scouting department. So they'll build that back up. George, we talked during the break, and it's a team that totally spaced. As I was going through all the notes, I spaced as a possible landing spot for Macklin.
Yeah, Arizona is one of the teams I think would be a good landing spot for Macklin. I would have them in my top five, actually. You think about it, they're going for broke, right? Fitzgerald's gone after this season. Palmer probably gone after this season, so they're really going for that 1 year. They lost Mike Floyd, and he's gone. Brown, Nelson, yay. I understand they have guys there. I don't know how much they are under the cap. I'll leave that to you, Mike, since you have the site up there. Yeah. But I could see that happening. And if Matt's right, and I think Matt is probably on to something here with the 1 year contract, I think, because it's so late now. I think if he wants big money, he may have to do a 1 year make good contract and then get it next offseason. Wouldn't he want to sign with a team that, A, good strong passing game, B, chance to win? So I think Arizona does make some sense here.
Yeah, there were three teams that I really looked at last night at first glance as I was going through it. There's three teams that I thought made sense. I thought one was the Panthers, I thought one was the Cardinals, and I thought the other was the Vikings. Now, I think Matt's right in saying that there's a really strong possibility that a one-year deal could be in play here. Like, the Cardinals have $16 million under the cap, so they can give Jeremy Maclin a one-year, just pick a number, $11 million deal, fully guarantee it, and it bolsters that receiving core without them having to tie themselves to him long-term and figure out whoever the hell the quarterback is going to be after Carson Palmer retires. By the way, they didn't draft anybody, which people assume they would do. So they're going to be in the market for whatever. And they'll be the team that if it falls apart this year, they don't win, they're going to be giving up everything to get up to the top of the draft to get one of these quarterbacks that's coming out next year. So right now, that receiving core is Larry Fitzgerald, who, by the way, led the league in receptions last year with 108. John Brown is the other one. They feel like they have his medical condition under control. I think that was a big factor as to why John Brown struggled last year, dealing with sickle cell traits, and I think that they think they have it under control. And then you got J.J. Nelson, who I really like as kind of a home run hitter type of wide receiver, but from a fantasy aspect, it's really difficult to count on J.J. Nelson. He's your DFS guy, George.
I agree. I said it's an interesting match there. I don't think he's going to get a one-year, $11 million deal, by the way. I think he's going to have to settle for less than that. Mm-hmm. I think if he
could
wants
to be. What Terrell Pryor got, $8 million?
That's around where I'm going. I think it even less than that. I think it's $6, $7 million range, somewhere in that range. I don't think he's in anywhere near double digits. But there are some teams that do have cap. I mean, we saw KC made their June 1st cut. I mean, the Cowboys have a decent amount of cap room. There are some teams that have an incredible amount of cap room. My thing is this. I think if he wants a long-term deal, it's probably going to be with a bad team because those are the teams, yes, that seem to have all the cap room. You know, the Cleveland, the San Francisco 49ers. 49ers can certainly use help, so can the Rams. But does he want to, you know, play the next 3-4 years there? I don't know.
The Titans and the Raiders are two of the teams with a lot of cap room that are on the come, right? They are obviously teams that are playing really well, and they're pushing towards a championship. But, you know, are the Raiders going to add him? To Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper, I don't know if they're going to like that mix. And to the Titans, a couple of months after drafting Corey Davis with the 5th overall pick, are they really going to spend big money on somebody like that when Rashard Matthews had a breakout season? They tied themselves to Tajay Sharpe with the draft pick last year. I don't know. I don't see it. But he can fit there. You know, if their wide receiving core was Rashard Matthews, Jeremy Maclin, and Corey Davis, you'd feel pretty damn great about it.
Yeah, but I think I think he's going to Tennessee as well, just because, as you said, Corey Davis. And the third round pick was Taywan Taylor,
who I
really like. Yeah. I think he's a guy that, you know, has a good possibility to be somebody that really, at some point this season, maybe later on, but he's a guy that's going under the radar that I really do like for them. And I just don't see it in Oakland. I know they have the money, but I mean,
yeah, I don't see it either.
Yeah, it's just stuff. I think Macklin's best, point of action right now might be just to sit back, see who gets injured in training camp, and then, you know, try and pounce on that opportunity to leverage himself.
Yeah,
you know, I can see him doing that, Matt. But my only problem with that is fantasy wise. If that's what he does, that's great for him business wise. But then I want nothing to do with him in fantasy.
I agree.
He's waiting till.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but I honestly, even if he was with the Chiefs, he was kind of like maybe inside my top 50. He wasn't even a top 40 wide receiver for me.
Yeah, for me, I didn't really want much to do with him. It is more to do with Alex Smith than KC than Maclin.
Mm-hmm.
But my problem is if he waits till training camp, that means he has no chemistry with the wide receiver. He may not know all the routes come opening, and it's just be too dangerous here. But business-wise, that might be the best thing for him. So, like I said, leverage another team and get more money. There, I said, I think Macklin's going to have to weigh at this point in the offseason, Which is why he really got screwed by Andy Reid. What was his wedding present? Were these papers?
Yeah, seriously. Better than a nice fat check.
I think at this point he's going to have to wait. I could sign long-term, more money with a bad team, a Rams, a San Francisco 49ers, or sign that one-year $6 million deal, $7 million with a good team. Mike, while you got it up, how much cap room do the Seahawks have?
The Seahawks, I'm looking at it right now, they have only $9 million, so he'd eat up most of that.
Yeah, so that's probably not happening either unless they made some other moves.
By the way, we do have a poll up. There's a lot of options here, so we took a couple of guesses as to who these could be. So the poll is, where will Jeremy Maclin end up? 1, Arizona. 2, Carolina. 3, Detroit. 4, other. And I want you to let us know. So far, 2 people let us know that Baltimore is one of those options. I would just say that the cap situation isn't good in Baltimore. I don't know who they'd have to cut to go out and get Maclin. Another last thing on the cap ramifications, I think they saved $7 million, the Chiefs did, in dead money, which they can spread over these 2 years. But they only save for this year, I think they only save $4 to $5 million. So it wasn't all of that $9 million coming off the cap. They're only going to save $4 to $5 million, somewhere in that range, due to bonuses and dead money, like I just mentioned. So, they saved a little bit, but I guess they're preparing for the worst. We all know that injuries happen and you have to end up signing guys here late, and they didn't think wide receiver is the place to spend it. So there we go. Go ahead, Matt.
I mean, as far as targets go, Baltimore is the best spot for him because there's so many targets available there. I mean, you're banking on Bashaud Perriman finally becoming a player. So, I mean, and
like I'm not. Said, are you guys?
No, but that's what that's what Baltimore must be doing because, you know, they got Mike Wallace and him right now. So, I mean,
it's one of my least favorite picks of that draft a couple of years ago. The Bashaud Perriman and Philip Dorsett went right around the same area of that draft, and both of them have done nothing in their career so far.
Yeah, but I mean, for fantasy value, that's the place where I'd have to see him having really good. I mean, Detroit would be in another situation, but like you said, they got Marvin Jones they paid for. So, but I mean, there could be possibilities where maybe a quarterback reworks his deal a little. I don't know, but I'm just trying to create situations.
Yeah, I mean, Arizona just looks like a really good spot to me personally, but we'll see. You know, I don't know what kind of relationship he's got with Palmer, with Fitzgerald, with whomever. So, again, hit us up on Twitter, at FNTSY Radio. That poll is up. Where's Jeremy Maclin going to end up? We'll talk a little bit of baseball. We'll try and make that transition. A really interesting stat on Kenley Jansen, Matt. He got his 39th strikeout of the season, which is significant because
he didn't allow a walk yet, right?
That's right. Breaks the major league record for most strikeouts in a season without having allowed a walk. I guess the funny thing to look at his stat line, he is dominating, but only 8 saves. He just hasn't had the opportunities. The one thing I would say is it looks like the Dodgers, having taken over first place again last night, are hitting their stride.
Yeah, I'm not worried. The Dodgers are winning that division. I don't care how good Arizona or Colorado is currently playing. It's the Dodgers there. It's just like the Cubs. The Cubs right now are playing .500. There's no doubt the Cubs are going to win that division. There's no doubt Washington's going to win the East. So it's all about the wild card in the National League.
George Kershaw couldn't be any better, but he doesn't get the win.
No, I'm not watching National League Baseball anymore. According to Matt, it's all over.
Well, I mean, honestly, those 3 divisions, do you see any other team really threatening those guys?
No, I don't. I mean, I guess I could say St. Louis, maybe pushing the Cubs a little. The Cubs aren't playing so well right now, but they just got swept by San Diego.
It's June 2nd or 3rd.
14 strikeouts. Get me a win, buddy. 7 innings. 2 hits, 14 Ks. Can't get the W. Talk some baseball when we come back. Mike, Matt, and George after this. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Going through some numbers here. Just looking at that Dodgers game last night. It's really amazing that two teams strike out 42 times. And Kershaw, 7 innings, Matt, 2 hits, gives up the 1 run, 14 Ks. He almost took the L. If not for Bellinger, he comes out of there with a loss in a game like that because Nelson pitched his tail off. Niebel blows the save in the ninth.
It's not for Grandel, he gets the loss.
Oh, it's Grandal. All right, sorry. Did Bellinger hit one? Did he hit
yes.
it in extras?
Extra innings.
The game
he crushed
Got it.
He crushed it. I mean, but
so,
it was a excellent pitching duel. So, I mean, even if Kershaw would have had the 7 innings, the 1 run and 14 strikeouts and lost the game, I mean, so be it. I mean, Jimmy Nelson really pitched his heart out. Is a guy that really infuriates me. I went in Fab early on, picked him up, and then dropped him, and now he's just been on a nice run, so I'm a bit angry.
George, on Bellinger, his average has plummeted as of late. He obviously has a huge home run last night, but, you know, he's a rookie, so you have to have expectations that he's going to have some ups and downs here. But his average is down to 245, 252 now, so it's dropped quite a bit in the last few weeks.
It has, and you said it. That's sort of to be expected there. Adjustments are being made to him. Now he has to make them back. He's still hitting the long ball, so you're still getting some value there. I'm still starting him in fantasy. I'm not worried about the Dodgers sending him down with AAA if anybody else is. But like I said, this is not all that surprising.
Yeah,
Bellinger was on as you said, the average plummeted. He was like 8 for his last 46 with 22 strikeouts before that home run. So that was definitely needed.
Yeah, only one multi-hit game in the last couple of weeks. So we'll continue to track that, obviously. Just really kind of a huge game there. We're going to talk about MLB injuries, which is always not everybody's favorite topic, but we're going to update you on that in the next hour. And, George, the closer report. You want to give us a little tease before we dive into it? Any big movement on the closer report?
No, there's really nothing. Closer report was quiet this week. Always a good thing for me. It makes my job easier. I said the biggest thing for me was you think Brad Hand might take over Mauro, though Mauro once again got the save last night, so maybe it is his job. Maybe it's a committee. I've been saying it all week. I wonder if the Padres do indeed trade Hand, and they said they will, that they're open for business here. I wonder if that's the first domino that's going to fall as far as all the other closers being dealt. You know, with I keep calling him Daniel Robertson, David Robertson, as far as when he gets dealt. We know the White Sox want to move him. So I wonder if, you know, that once again, that's the first domino to be moved. We are in early June now. I think trade talks will start to heat up. In the end, though, it may be all where it's, you know, July 30th, July 31st deals as teams wait till the very end of the deadline because that's when they think they'll get the best value.
Yeah, I would note that on my personal fantasy team, I have 5 total bench spots and 1 DL slot. They're filled with players that are currently injured. Segura, Haniger, Duffy, Bedrosian, Britton. That's where I'm at. I picked up Tanaka during the week. Bad timing. So I've been trying to find a damn starter because Duffy got hurt. I figured, all right, maybe Tanaka's on the move, a little buy-low situation. He gets destroyed. I'm even in worse shape now than I was a few days ago. I keep trying to fix things that are banged up by injury. The Segura thing really hurts. Matt, where's the initial report on Segura?
Seems like the service said that it's going to be more than 10 days, possibly a month, even 2. That's not too good to hear. So,
George, you never want to hear a high ankle sprain in the midst of a season, no matter what sport it is. And the high ankle sprain, the dreaded high ankle sprain, this could be a really long time for Segura.
I've got him in a couple of leagues, so yes, this hurts. Because even when he comes back, you know, he probably won't be at full strength. Maybe he doesn't run. He wasn't running all that much anyway. He was getting caught either way, so it may not have mattered. But, you know, not a good situation. The high ankle sprain is always the dreaded high ankle sprain.
Yeah. Well, we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more baseball. Close report. Get into some football if we can. Mike, George, and Matt back for hour number 2 on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Back with hour number 2 on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Nothing like wild conjecture about where players can land. And we got an hour left of that to do. Jeremy Maclin, obviously the big news last night, being released by the Chiefs, who spent a lot of time this morning trying to figure out where he may end up. We have a poll up, people talking about A lot of conversation where he might go. We put the poll up. We're just trying to take some stabs. George and I really like Arizona. I personally like Carolina as a possible landing spot. I think we all like Detroit as a possibility, but they've just spent a bunch of money on Marvin Jones. So the fourth option we put up there is other, and I want you to let us know. A lot of votes for the Ravens. I would caution everybody that there's some cap issues there. There is a vote for Buffalo, Matt, and they –
Jeremy put it.
I actually didn't put – I selected other, but I did not put Buffalo.
So it is – Buffalo's got a vote there. And there, you know, if you want to go the TMZ route, Shady McCoy was at Jeremy Maclin's wedding a couple of weeks ago. They all got together to hang out with Andy Reid. So they're still tight. Maybe there's some truth to that rumor that maybe we can start the rumor that since they're buddies, he'll end up in Buffalo. Him and Zay Jones and Sammy Watkins and the whole crew build an actual receiving core with the lack of cap space that they have.
The first time in years.
A lot of votes for Ravens. One guy put New England, and if that happens, they actually have enough room. If that happens, I'm out. I'm just tapping out on the 2017 season. It'll be over before it starts. We got Tennessee some votes in there, so keep them coming. Some interesting ideas there. Again, cap space is going to play a factor here. We talked about Clayton Kershaw, his brilliance. I don't know how the Brewers struck out 26 times, but they did it. They tied the Major League record, one of which was theirs back in 2004. A couple of other teams had done it as well. We talked about some injuries, which are not all that fun. Gene Segura might be gone for a couple of months with that high ankle sprain. George talked a little bit about closer report, too, and we're going to get into that in the next segment and just kind of dive into what some options will be for your closers. This is the type of time of year where you really need to dive into that, try and find some saves where you might have been missing them. Brad Brock gets another save last night. He's been a savior for me when I lost Zach Britton, George.
Yeah, he has been. He's had some bumps in the road, but other than that, he's been a solid guy. Britton is throwing now, so you probably only have a couple of weeks, maybe till the end of the month, early July, before Britton comes back, and you're going to lose those saves. But Baltimore lost, what, 8-9 games in a row, so that killed Brock for a while. But they've sort of reversed themselves this week. They're playing better, and good to see this Boston-Baltimore series where they're not throwing balls at each other.
Yeah, jeez. I mean, don't get me started on that whole brouhaha. When was that? It feels like it was weeks ago with the Bryce Harper Hunter Strickland thing. Did that happen on Sunday after our show, I guess? So it's been beaten to death.
Bryce Harper
week,
was Monday, Memorial Day.
Yeah. So there you go. So we don't have to talk about that. I know everybody's tired of hearing about it, but you know, I'd say good for Bryce. But you're a $500 million entity, dude. Don't break your hand on some meathead's face because he threw the ball at you. Just saying. We'll be back to talk a little bit about that. And Coda Glover, my new boy, back after this. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Please download the app, FNTSY Sports Radio app, in the iTunes Store on Google Play and listen for free anytime, anywhere. Get the Fantasy Sports Radio app for free right now in the iTunes Store on Google Play. Take the experts with you. So, George, one thing I'm going to bash you about is Dallas Keuchel's 9-0. And you were like, let's see you do it again, tough guy. And here he is. He's 9-0. So I just wanted to bring that up. Figured I'd throw a shot your way to get the closer report thing started. But he's 9-0, George, and he's absolutely mowing down the major leagues.
You hear that noise? That's the bus backing up on George.
Yes, especially since I've been more than praising him all season long. I was so worried about him coming into the season. Funny, I think we talked about him yesterday as well. As far as he's not a hard throw. He's not Chris Sale going to throw the ball by you or anybody like that. He's got to hit his spots. Coming up with the shoulder injury from last year, certainly worried about that kind of pitcher because if he's not perfect with location, he's going to get hit. Well, he has been perfect. He's been fantastic this season, really. It's good to see. It's always good to see talent reach its full level here. So, yeah, no problem with Keuchel whatsoever. I have no idea what he has to do with the closer report, perhaps. But, he's not a closer.
It was a clumsy transition. I had to take a shot at you first. He's also got a sweet beard, man.
Yeah, that beard I'd like to – I mean, for him, his beard I could kind of deal with. Colby Rasmus, I can't. But I would have been happy with a Dallas Keuchel, say, 2014 season. That was my expectations, which was a really good year. And, you know, he is just getting it done, as Tony Sincotta would say. I mean, it's just been really fun to watch him pitch.
Yeah. So, George, in reality, the closer report is something that comes out every Tuesday for you. You said Brad Hand is the guy that might start the dominoes falling. And we've talked all these names, like who could be moving, Herrera, Robertson, bunch of other names out there. But Brad Hand may be the first piece so he can possibly set the market as to what the Padres can get for him.
Yeah, I think that's what the Padres would like to do, because I think there's two rules of thought here. Either you trade early because you'll get more, because, hey, we traded him 2 months earlier than the deadline. So you get it for, you know, obviously you get it for an extra 60 games, 50 games, 40 games, whatever it comes out to being. So you can go with that direction. Or you're the other school of thought is you wait until the deadline, because that's when teams will pay the most. When, you know, when the deadline's coming up, they have no choice. Either pay now or you're done. You know, put your cards on the table, that's it. So it usually comes down to those two. Also, Brad Hand, as good as his numbers are, is not a closer yet. So theoretically, you know, maybe they can't, they shouldn't, maybe they can't get as much for him as they'd like anyway, because he's not a closer. Also, odds are Brad Hand gets dealt. I mean, think about it. How many contending teams need a closer? Right now, teams may have screwed themselves that have somebody. Washington may have fixed that problem with your boy, Cody Glover. Right, yeah, Washington was the big team that needed a closer. Now they find out, hey, we had one on our team the whole time, so maybe they don't pay that big price for a closer. I still think they'll pay for a reliever, maybe even more than one. I think Washington's another team that needs to go for broke this season and really try and finally win this thing. But I think that's interesting. Now you mentioned Kelvin Herrera, good chance he gets dealt. I think Joaquin Soria could also get dealt out of there. The Angels could deal Bud Norris. I don't think they'll trade Pedroia, but Bud Norris may have enhanced his value for a team that wants a reliever right now, but it won't be as a closer. How about Ramos in Miami? You know, Miami's playing better, but they're not going to make the playoffs this year. If you can get good value for Ramos, wouldn't you move him? So I think he's another guy who could get moved.
Alex Colomé, you think, in Tampa?
I think they'd want a ton for him, because I think he's a really good reliever. I think he's one of the better unknown relievers in baseball. Tampa Bay's played maybe slightly better than we expected. Maybe they want to hold on for a little bit. I think Tampa Bay in the end does move him, but I think he's a July 30 or July 31st guy.
Yeah,
Jim Bowden the other day on a different network talking about Cody Glover and saying that there's no doubt Glover's better than anybody that they're going to get on the market. He's better than Robertson. They have their closer. If they go out and get somebody, Glover's still going to be the closer. Do you feel that way?
No, I don't. I think they have to go out and get, as George said, multiple arms. I like one proven guy. I'd like another elite arm. Doesn't have to be a closer. I mean, Jim Bowden said a lot of things. He said that Trey Turner was, a sixth number all pick overall. You know, last year he said Justin Turner, you know, in May was pretty much a guy he would have never signed, couldn't hit 10 home runs. So I'm gonna cool my Jim Bowden thoughts on that. You know, I'm going to move on from him. But I think the guy who, you know, you're looking at these teams like San Diego, as George was mentioning to you about Brad Hand and stuff. You know, the Pirates have long wanted to trade Tony Watson. I don't think he has tremendous trade value. I mean, somebody would take him. I think the kid that they may have to part with, being that they're going to be blowing things up, and the guy they acquired last year from Melanson, believe it or not, is this Felipe Rivero kid who, I mean, I was listening to the Met game walking home from the studio last night, and I mean, I could hear the heat coming through the radio. He was throwing 101, 102. This is a guy that a lot of teams are going to want. And, I mean, the Pirates don't want to trade him. But if he can return, say, whether himself or in a package, the best value for a team that is obviously going to be blowing things up shortly, I think that might be a name that many aren't considering, but a name that might get moved.
Makes sense, George?
It's unlikely. He's not proven anywhere, and I think Pittsburgh could build around him in the bullpen. So I think unless they get an Andrew Miller-type deal, which I don't think they'll get for someone who's not proven that he can handle any kind of a pennant race or ninth-inning role, I don't see that.
But I'm not saying as a closer. I'm not saying he's got to be a closer. I mean, this is a kid that's really been dominant right now. And I understand he's unproven, but, I mean, I think teams are going to want to solidify that bullpen.
Oh, I think teams would want him, but I don't think they're going to give up the package that Pittsburgh would need to get him. I find that. I mean, Rivero is someone, if I'm Pittsburgh, I build around. I'm not dealing him. He's cheap. He's the exact kind of player they need.
Yes, no, I yeah. get that, but the problem is he's a reliever. We see like Tampa Bay, small market teams like Tampa Bay, Kansas City, every other year they have a new closer. I say you put Rivera in a package with an Andrew McCutchen, and you can get a really good return or something like that. I mean, I understand, and I don't disagree that he's somebody you want to build with, but I think the closers, the arms in the bullpen, you know, that's the easiest place to rebuild on.
I mean, I would only say if they're rebuilding, what is the point of having, you know, of building the bullpen if they're going to blow, if they're going to meet so many other pieces and build up so many other pieces? That if they can get some return for him, I could see it. George, the one name that you mentioned, which is interesting because I hadn't been thinking about him in this light, is Bud Norris. He's been good while Cam Bedrosian has been on the shelf, and good enough maybe that now that he does garner some trade interest. Bedrosian has none because he's been injured, so they can put him back into that role, and then Bud Norris becomes the piece that maybe they didn't expect him to be. They're obviously without Trout for God knows how long. It's at least a couple of months, and then, you know, the Angels had no expectations before this Trout injury. Now they're in the tank, so maybe Bud Norris is a guy on the market that we didn't anticipate. Do you agree with what George said, Matt?
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely agree. I think that's a great point. And if I'm the Angels, look, Bud Norris is a luxury right now. He's somebody that, you know, coming into the season, they didn't see as somebody closing. I was hoping at one point he'd get into the rotation, but he's pitched very well in the bullpen and as a closer. And as you said, Bedrosian just hasn't been able to stay healthy. I mean, every time he's given the opportunity, something, you know, unfortunately he had a blood clot last year. He had this hamstring injury this season. So, yeah, I mean, Bud Norris is the perfect guy to flip. He was a guy that became an asset all of a sudden for you on a team that needs a whole lot of pitching and a whole lot of help in many areas. So, yeah.
Yeah, and George Houston Street is scheduled to make his final rehab appearance, so he may actually get added to that bullpen. It gets
oh, my
a little
God, enough with Street, Socha.
I know.
Yeah, I think he might have had a setback, believe it or not.
He did.
Really?
He had a setback. Yeah.
Shocking.
Listen, does anybody know the direction that the Angels are going in? I mean, really, you have Trout and nobody else. I mean, it's not good. The minor league system's terrible. The major league team is average at best, and that's with Trout on the team. I mean, this is an organization that's wow, how bad can we be?
Yeah,
it pains me to think that they would have to trade Trout in order to start this thing over. I mean, can you imagine being an Angels fan and having to watch that happen?
Yeah, it is a horrific thought for an Angel fan, but I think it's really their only course of action. I mean, they got a shortstop who's supremely talented with the glove in Andrelton Simmons, but they traded away their best young arm. And the MLB Network keeps putting Albert Pujols up every time, you know, for home run number 600. But last night, he hit a ground ball, double play. The guy cannot even, like, get to first base. It took him so long to get there. It's kind of
several sad. Years left on that deal too. So I believe so.
That's not going to work out well.
No, it's really not. It's just going to be a walk away from it kind of situation. You know, one guy I want to talk about because we've talked about him a lot this year is Gerrit Cole. Talk about him after the break. Some questions about his velocity. Is he injured? What's the story with Gerrit Cole? So we'll talk about him. A few other guys can come back, give you some updates on some injuries. It's Mike, Matt, and George on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We are the Roto Experts, taking you all the way till 10 o'clock. Back on the Roto Experts in the morning, Mike Blewett, George Kurtz, Matt Modica. We're here till 10. When Fantasy Bagels and Baseball, Tony Cincotta and Cha-Cha will take over. Then we got the Weekend Fantasy Update. That's Joe Galina, Frank Stamfel, and Mike Florio. And then we got the NASCAR Fantasy Hour with Scott and Sean Engel later today. So, look, today's a great day to talk about a lot of stuff. There's tons going on, so it makes our job a lot of fun. Sometimes I honestly get too excited and I jump around to different topics. And, you know, George, just to wrap up the closer report, You know, Kota Glover, we talked about. Edwin Diaz is a name that we didn't get to mention, but he's mentioned in your articles. He's gone five straight outings without allowing a run.
Yeah, I wasn't all that worried about him. They said right away they just wanted to get him worked out. There wasn't somebody else in that bullpen who was really ready to take that job. Tony Zitch got a chance and immediately blew the next save. So they just needed him to work out his mechanical problems. He did. He's looked great late. Seattle has a lot of problems. You know, we already mentioned they lost Segura. Nelson Cruz is banged up. The rotation's a wreck. Diaz right now is not one of those problems. I think he's safe. Long term, I might be a little bit worried about him, but I even think then he'll be fine. I'm not worried about Diaz. I didn't panic when he lost the job. They said right away it was just going to be a temporary thing, and it's the one time where I might have taken a manager at his word.
How about Aroldis Chapman? Expectations as to when he is back?
I think the Yankees are going to play cautious, that they usually do. He's throwing. I think he's going to do a rehab start. They might send him a rehab appearance. They might send him down for a game or two if they feel it's necessary. But what are we, June 3rd here? I would expect no later than maybe not next weekend or the week after that.
Matt, easily my best pickup of this baseball season was when I picked up Fernando Rodney. It was out of desperation. I needed some saves, and he hasn't given up an earned run since. I know I'm jinxing him, but it is what it is. He still sports a 6 ERA, but he hasn't given up an earned run basically since April.
It's kind of funny how that works out, huh? I mean, look, yeah. These things happen, and you know, you take advantage of that. You ride the good. I just think at some point Rodney will revert back to being Rodney. He's had a great run here, but I'm going to bet on the track record of failure.
Yeah, and I'm picking up saves of Betances and Rodney right now, and they're both likely to go away at some point soon, right, George?
I don't think Rodney's saves are going away. I think his ratios are going to go the other direction again. He'll start to get hit, but I don't think the saves are going anywhere. The Diamondbacks have nobody else in that bullpen.
That was my question. I guess if he gets blown up, can he lose his job, or is there just nobody else?
No, it would have happened already. He was terrible in April. I mean, he was giving a run after run after run. There was just no one else there to take that job. Now, if they stay in contention, maybe. We've seen them do some weird moves in the past. Maybe they decide to acquire a closer. But I doubt that's happening, too. So as far as job security is concerned, I think you're safe with Rodney. I have him on a couple of teams, too. Picked him up late. And, you know, you live with the ERA and whips. Generally, for a reliever, as long as the ERA and whip is not a disaster, you're going to be okay. They don't pitch enough innings. So, you know, I'm all right with that. He throws the ball hard. He makes his share of saves. I know it sounds silly, but I'm really not worried about Rodney.
I can understand that for now. But, I mean, the question is, what is the Diamondbacks going to do? Are they really going to try and go for it at some point? Because I think the Dodgers will expand the lead, will, you know, run away with that division at some point. And is it for them this season? Is it, if they're just one of a group of teams at the deadline, do they go for it? Or do they say, you know what, let's be smart here? Because I hear things out of Arizona that AJ Pollock's available. I still believe they would love to get rid of that Greinke contract. So I don't know.
I like how George said the Diamondbacks have made some weird moves in the past. Weird moves like trading Dansby Swanson and Zerinzi Arte for Shelby Miller, like moves like that.
I think that might be qualified as worse than weird. It's a different regime now, so I'm sure they wouldn't do that. Okay. I think Matt's got the point. Let's say the Dodgers run away with the division. You want to give the Cubs the Central, the Nationals, the East. So the Diamondbacks are competing with Colorado, the Cardinals. Is that really it for the wild card?
I don't know. Somebody's got to get hot at some point, too. I mean, like,
all right, so we'll throw in another team there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're competing with three other teams then, you know, Cardinals, Rockies, and an unknown team for two wild card spots. I gotta think the Diamondbacks, after the disaster that was, you know, the PR disaster was the past couple of seasons, I gotta think they might want to go for it. And by that, I don't mean you trade. Well, they don't have anything else left to trade away anymore, but they might make some moves here. With that being said, I think Matt's right. I think Mike, I forget which one of you guys said it. They would love to get rid of Greinke. I don't think that's possible. Not in season. I think off season is when you have to work on that kind of deal. How much money goes back the other way and all this other crap that comes along with that contract. But I think the Diamondbacks will want to stay in this.
Yeah, I think you're right. But, you know, maybe they just kind of stick to the plan, work with what they have right now. And, you know, if the Greinke thing can net them something in the offseason, so be it. I agree. Moving a guy like that midseason would just take so much work. I don't see how that's possible. So, anyway, moving on to a guy I wanted to talk about because I was reading something the other day on Twitter. Gerrit Cole's velocity before the New York Mets and after the New York Mets, or basically like when that start occurred. His fastball has dropped by a mile an hour. His knuckle curve has dropped by over a mile an hour. There's questions about velocity. Some people, I was watching the other night, seemed like he's got to be hurt. There's something wrong with him. So, Matt, what are your thoughts? What's up with Gerrit Cole?
I mean, I'm looking at his game log on Brooks Baseball and his velocity. Yeah, I mean, the curve is down a mile and a half or so. And the four-seam is down, but it's under a mile. I don't think it's anything significant. I mean, usually we get concerned when somebody's throwing like 96, 97, and then they're going 92 or 91. I mean, maybe it's just a bad run here. He was pitching very well. And I hope he's not injured because that would really just totally wreck the Pirates' plans, in my opinion, because they are looking to move this guy, and he does need to start pitching a little better. This has been a tough three outings that started in Atlanta. Of course, I had him, I redid my ranks the other day, and I had Cole at night. It seems like everybody that I liked just got killed these last 2 days. Marco Estrada, I finally moved up Pineda. He gets blown up. Gerrit Cole. I mean, I had Gerrit Cole 18th overall coming in. I have him at 19th, but it's not looking too good this past week.
So, I know how you feel, Matt. It's like my who's not list. I put him on the who's not list. The guy hits 18 home runs over the weekend.
Well, that's good. I know how to take shots on guys when you put them on the who's not list. I'm like, I'm good to go.
That's right. I'm just trying to help you out with the waiver wire.
Yeah. So, George, Gerrit Cole has given up 28 hits and... I'll do quick math, 16 earned runs in under 15 innings these last three starts.
Yeah, not good. I think two of them against the Mets. Maybe the Mets just have his number. I mean, you could look at it that way as well. Listen, we've seen this before. His average fastball this season is 96 miles an hour, so his arm seems to be fine. That's the highest he's had since his rookie season. So the arm seems to be issues here. I think Matt sort of put it right. It could just be a bit of a mid-season slump. You know, Matt brought up Michael Pineda, too. His last couple of starts have been awful. Pitchers go through this. Just like hitters go through slumps, so do pitchers. So I'm sort of more inching towards that. But I do think Pittsburgh is starting to get worried now. I think they do want to deal him. They realize he's not going to stay there long term. So they want to get max value for him. And him not pitching well right now. And now all these other rumors on maybe there is an injury. I don't think there is an injury. But the fact that the rumors are going around brings the price down a little bit. It doesn't help the Pirates. So I wonder how that's going to change their plans. Does that mean they trade him earlier? Before he starts pitching even worse, or do they have to let him build up his value now and pitch better? If he doesn't pitch better from now until the trade deadline, does he now become an off-season trade target rather than mid-season?
Yeah, and one other
Mike
thing,
Pineda.
Too.
Mike Pineda going through slumps, he just summarized his entire career, George.
Yeah, ain't that the truth. He can't get the ball down his own all of a sudden. Everything's his curveballs are staying up high. He's hanging pitches. Even the fastballs are pretty much right down Broadway.
One last
thing. He is the ultimate head-shaking pitcher, Pineda. There's times where he's brilliant, and you're like, yeah, this is it. This is what he should be. He's huge. He can dominate, and then that stuff happens. And you're like, Matt, there's like no solution for a guy like that. It seems to be mental.
It does definitely seem to be mental with Pineda. Just real quick on Gerrit Cole, just to jump back.
Yeah.
The fastball percentage is down like 10% this season, and the changeup is up like 8%. And the changeup has been getting hit pretty hard of late, the isolated power and stuff. So maybe he's just got to work on his pitch mix as well and executing his pitches better. That's another thing just to put out there. Pineda, you know, it's like he is just such an enigma. There seems to be, you know, so much talent, and there are times he just looks so damn good and so unhittable, and times it looks like he's like, you know, he's throwing up meatballs. He looks like Michael Pineda or Pineda. I know people love doing that on Twitter, and I kind of felt bad last night. I was seeing some tweets with pictures of Pinatas, and I'm like, this guy's pitched really good this year. And, you know, he had a rough night. So, I mean, I don't know. Yeah.
Look, he's going to be a free agent at the end of this year. Somebody's going to take a shot at him. It ain't going to be the Yankees, because I think it's just the type of guy that you're like, well, good luck. Godspeed, and hope it gets worked out. But we're not taking another chance on it. But, George, he's going to get paid by someone.
Yes, he is. Listen, we've seen this over and over again, right, with pitching. If you can have a good arm, you're going to get signed, and you're going to make some money. That being said, I think Pineda probably does come back to the Yankees next season.
So?
But, you know, don't they have to? Sabathia's gone.
I know.
So you have Severino. Tanaka won't be able to opt out because he's a disaster right now, too. So, you know, it's Severino. You know, you got Chance Adams. That's a guy, by the way, if you're in Fantasy League, said it yesterday. If you're looking to speculate on somebody, the Yankees are just waiting for someone to get hurt, and then Chance Adams comes up, but I don't think he's ever leaving once he comes up. That would be a guy to speculate on.
Zach Greinke to the Yankees. Let's do it.
No, Mr. Anxiety, never going to happen.
Yeah. We'll be back. We'll talk some injuries, which is always fun, after the break. Mike, George, and Matt, until 10 o'clock. We're back after this on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Wanted to touch on some injuries because we're talking about, you know, what's going on with Garrett Cole, all that kind of stuff. So Houston Street, I mentioned, is coming back. Kendall Graveman. Jesus, I mean, this is brutal. The opening night starter for them will soon begin a strengthening program for his injured shoulder, but there's no timetable. That is a punt for the rest of the year. If you were a Kendall Graveman owner, that's like the worst possible news. Like, we're not really sure. There's no structural damage, but his shoulder's killing him, so we're going to see if he can throw for the rest of the year, Matt.
Yeah, that is horrific news for Kendall Graveman, who actually was someone who seemed to really have some relevance this season in, like, deeper leagues. He was very good at home, was a guy you really targeted, but was becoming a guy you could play on the road. Staying in Oakland, Jesse Hahn says he's ready to come off the DL. I actually cut him for the fact that I thought it was more of a, I thought the injury was more severe. But even if Jesse Hahn does come back, he's a guy I do like, but a guy that never, ever stays healthy as well.
Yeah, George, Ryan Braun was on 10-day DL. He's eligible to come off on Monday, but it looks like that's an open-ended timeline for his strained left calf. Ryan Braun, a guy that you talked about, was a possible trade chip at some point. Obviously, with his injury, he's kind of up in the air.
It's injuries. He's been out a couple times this season now. So, yeah, he's hurt that a little bit. And now he's also a 10-5 player, so he could turn down a deal to anywhere. Not that he would. The Dodgers are a team we keep looking at for Ryan Braun. I don't think he would turn a deal down there anyway. But, listen, the Milwaukee
Why the hell would you that turn that down? Why would anybody turn that down? L.A. first
nuts,
place?
Right? Yeah. L.A. first place, you know, sunshine. But, hey, Milwaukee's a good hitter's park. Maybe he's looking at whatever. I don't think Braun turns it down. But they are saying that's a multi-week injury, not multi-day. So this came out about a couple days ago. So, you know, he's not coming back when eligible. I think mid-June's your best case for Ryan Braun.
Matt, we talked about Gene Segura. Felix Hernandez looking like he's going to get started on some rehab starts. Maybe join them middle of June.
Hey, I've long loved Felix, but last year and this season, I've kind of stayed away from Felix, kind of made that point known, especially last season. But with the current state of pitching right now, if you own him, you're probably excited that he's coming back. And, you know, say he is on a waiver wire in a shallower league, he might be somebody you have to pick up.
Matt, one of the more disappointing DL stints that we've seen so far was Alex Wood. He's going to miss a second start, it looks like. Nothing more serious than originally diagnosed. I think they're just going to take his time. He's been on the 10-day DL since May 27th with some inflammation near the sternum. So it looks like maybe he'll join them the June 9th to 11th series against the Reds, not need a rehab assignment, which is good news and still kind of bad news because he's missing an additional start.
Yeah, but honestly, I'd rather them take this extra cautious with him. That was the one thing, as much as I love Alex Wood, I was concerned about him going to the DL. He's not a guy that's really been a proven person of health. You know, the injury was a concern.
Person of health.
Dr. A actually nailed it pretty well recently when he said that the SC joint, it would probably take him 4 weeks for a full recovery, and then he'd be fine.
Damn.
It looks like this is going to be shorter than 4 weeks, but when he was first put on the DL, I think it was, what was it, Memorial Day, people were like, oh, he's throwing today. It's just the Dodgers manipulating the 10-day DL. Obviously, that's not the case. I just, as an Alex Wood owner, I'd rather him miss an extra start or two and be fully healthy.
George, Taiwan Walker, it looks like it's still kind of up in the air. They're making sure that he's 100% before he comes back.
Oh, as well they should, right? You should be, of course, with your young starting pitchers here. So that's not a surprise at all. He's not going to pitch Sunday. So they've already said that he'll miss that start where he was scheduled for. He's got the blister, which is not a huge thing, but they want to make sure that thing is healed. We've seen this over and over again, especially with Mr. Wood, that those things, sometimes they pop up real frequently, depending on how, you know, what kind of curveball you're throwing here. It's usually the curve of the slider where you get those blisters, that they don't heal very well. You know, you got to try that pickle juice or whatever else some people believe in. But hopefully it goes away sooner rather than later.
And third stint on the DL this year for Aaron Sanchez, dealing with blister issues on his right middle finger, Matt. It looks like maybe he's going to be ready to come back soon, but gosh, it's been an injury-plagued season for a guy that some people really had high expectations for.
Yeah, it's kind of, he's turning out for this season to be like the American League Rich Hill. It's a shame because this is a talented young pitcher. I thought he'd regress a little. I didn't think he'd have a full-time regression. But, you know, I don't know. Toronto, from where they started the season to where they are now, they were like 2-9 or 2-10, and people were writing them off. You know, if they can get him back, they need to be really, really take their time with him as well. They just got J.A. Happ back. Marco Estrada, besides that seven-inning shelling against the Yankees, has pitched incredibly well this season. Marcus Stroman, since the All-Star break last year, has pitched really, really well. So I think they have one of the better rotations in the American League and in the American League East for sure. So, and everybody seems to be getting healthy in offense. So take your time with Sanchez. Let the blisters fully heal, and hopefully he's back, you know, in a couple of weeks to a month.
Okay, well, that's it. We had to get your injury updates in there. Those are always a fun and uplifting segment with all your starting pitch. I mean, how many starting
pitchers? Did we talk Eduardo Rodriguez? Did I miss this?
Oh, yeah, no, we didn't talk. That was interesting, George. Did anybody watch the? I actually had ESPN on that night, and right as the game was starting, they said that John Farrell went to the umpire and let it be known that his pitcher fell down in the bullpen. And just to watch out for that. And I was like, oh, if this guy fell in the bullpen and they're concerned, why is he starting this game?
I thought the same thing. That made no sense. And plus, he's had knee injuries in the past. And apparently, according to Farrell, and once again, I don't know how true this is, but according to Farrell, he has some kind of, what do you want to call it, hereditary knee problems, where I guess his knees are weaker than most normal people's. So now that's why he didn't pitch well. That's why he's back on the DL. Boy, that's something you don't hear about every day, that he has like some kind of in his DNA where he has bad knees, whatever it might be. So yeah, he fell
congenital situation. Yeah.
So you know, he fell down, and this is not the first time he's done that. You know, where maybe his knee gives out as he's pushing off. I don't know. It's just strange. But yeah,
how the hell is he
DL.
A professional athlete? How does that even happen?
How do you start him, though? I don't understand that. It was just, I remember watching that and saying, wait, this guy's going to start? And I don't know.
I heard the radio feed on a podcast somewhere. They played the sound, and it was so odd because as soon as, you know, he came into the game, the announcers were like, yeah, he probably shouldn't be out here right now. So it was a very unique scenario. It doesn't happen too often. But what is the prognosis? Is he out for a spell? I hadn't seen any follow ups on that.
He saw three or more four of my fantasy teams. I'm sure he's out forever.
You were deep with Eddie Rodriguez. You were deep with Eddie Rodriguez. That's right. Going into the year,
it is a shame because I mean I can understand George's. Is his anger because he's pitched really well and he's making a lot of nice progression since his call up last season, since he came back up. So that's a tough loss.
There's no prognosis on when he comes back. They're just calling it discomfort right now. So no tears, no sprains or anything like that, just discomfort, which should mean that he's off. He'll miss two starts. He could technically miss one start. And comes back for that second start. But that's good news, but I think it's still a wait and see approach here. And by the way, you want to talk about injuries. How about Realmuto killing those fish last night?
I thought they said no fish were harmed.
Oh, that would make a good story then.
Yeah.
Come on, I wanted to see that backstop be flooded with fish. That'd be great.
Nemo's dying.
all right. So that's it for the injury report. George and I were going to talk a little bit about our mock draft. We could talk about it some after the break. The only thing I'll say as we make a quick transition to football before the break, if you're in a 12-team league, I'm telling you right now, and it's a one-quarterback league, you can wait forever on quarterbacks and on tight ends. Matt, we've seen this a couple of times already. George and I are in the middle of this experts draft. It's a standard league. George, you waited a really long time to pick your quarterback, and you got Kirk Cousins. I think you took him in double-digit rounds. I only picked Phil Rivers a little early because I have some high expectations for him.
You picked him very early.
Plus, I didn't like it. It became to me, I thought I was going to pick some sort of depth running back or wide receiver that I wasn't in love with. And the guy that I liked the most that was available was Rivers. And I was dedicating myself to picking a quarterback late, but Rivers was still sitting there, and I think he has a chance to be top six. So that's why I took him where I did. But tight ends, God, just wait all day. George just got Zach Ertz in like the 15th round.
I mean, I understand the waiting on the quarterback stuff. I play in the 6-point passing quarterback leagues, and I don't have a problem waiting, but if a Drew Brees is there like late in the fifth round, mid to late in the fifth round, I have a hard time passing him up. In the leagues I play, somebody's going to take Rodgers and probably Brady before the fifth round, but I think there's nice security.
Yeah, I mean, George, we've talked about it a lot, going into this year, the depth. I mean, we're still here. We're in, the 15th or 16th round here. We're trying to wrap this thing up. Guys that are still on the board, Carson Palmer, Matt Stafford, Blake Bortles, Dak Prescott, even Sam Bradford, if you're feeling frisky, and Andy Dalton. These guys haven't even been drafted yet. So it's a crazy amount of guys that would even be on the waiver wire to start the league.
Yeah, you can wait forever. I did in the Fantasy Radio mock a couple of weeks ago. I got Marcus Mariota in round 11. And then you mentioned Kirk Cousins, I think, in round 12 here. Tight ends and quarterback, you can wait on.
Yeah. We'll wrap up the show. Pass it off to Fantasy Bagels and Baseball after this. It's Mike, Matt, and George back after this. Back to close out the show. We got Tony Sakata and Cha-Cha be joining the show, or be taking over for us after we are out of here in the next couple of minutes. George and I will be back here tomorrow. Talk about George's who's hot or who's not. Matt, I hope you have some good plans for the weekend. Beyond that, we have a poll that we put up today on Fantasy Sports Radio at FNTSY Radio. Where will Jeremy Maclin end up? Now, we only have four choices on Twitter, so we took a couple of guesses. Arizona, Carolina, Detroit. Detroit takes that of the three, but the overwhelming choice was other. And some of the choices that came in on other were the Eagles. We got a Buffalo. We got a few Ravens. We got a New England. We got a Tennessee in there. Keep in mind, some of those teams have cap room, some of those don't. Guy saying the Eagles, I don't know why the hell they would do that. I mean, it just
won't be Philadelphia.
Yeah, they just spent a bunch of money on Alshon Jeffrey. They did pony up money to try to keep Maclin. It's the only thing I'll say. It was the big flaw of it was the biggest flaw in the Chip Kelly program. He expected to keep Maclin around, and it all fell apart. after that and fell apart in like a 7-9 season. It wasn't the worst season I've ever seen, but in any event, he's not going back to Philadelphia. For those of you that liked him in Philly, he won't be there. So that's the deal. You're Matt, after now you've had 2 hours to think about it. I know you want to say Buffalo, but what do you think on Macklin? Have you changed your mind at all?
I think the Ravens, if they can somehow finagle it, make the most sense. There's just too many targets out there. You know, they lost Dennis Pitter. I mean, I think that's a really good spot for him. I'd love the Lions, but if the Ravens can somehow work it out, that's my spot.
George, anything else there?
Yeah, I agree with Matt. I think Baltimore is my number one. Arizona be number two. I think a dark horse is Seattle. I think if they could finagle it somehow, I think that makes some sense there. Give Russell Wilson another receiver to go to opposite Doug Baldwin. I think Macklin sort of fits in there for the kind of receiver they like. So I think he might make some sense there. Detroit would be a team that I think it's more because of fantasy we want him to go there. But I don't think in the end that he'll make it.
Yeah, I mean, the Seattle Seahawks receiving core right now is Doug Baldwin, Jermaine Kearse, Tyler Lockett, Paul Richardson. I mean, they could stand. They got Tanner McAvoy, Amara Darbo, who they drafted this year. You know, they could stand to add somebody like Jeremy Macklin, that's for sure. It would round it out. Obviously, they're going to – I mean, their struggles are coming up front on that O-line. They're going to see if they can fix that. And if you guys want to take part in the Seattle Running Back Committee, be my guest. I assure you I will let you have at it because I'm not getting involved, George. I'm not getting involved.
I don't blame you. I wrote for the draft kit, Old Faces and New Places. I'm talking about Eddie Lacy, and I just don't know what to tell you about him. I mean, guy eats himself out of the league, gets hurt a lot. Is he just a goal line guy, short yardage guy? Pro sites is there. Rolls is still there. It's a mess. I don't want anything to do with it either.
If I can get Lacy in the sixth round,
Matt.
I'm sorry?
253 pounds. He's 253 pounds.
And he's incentive to stay there.
Look, but I mean, last time I seen Marshawn Lynch, he wasn't looking, you know, too small neither, and he's going to be starting running back this year.
I know. He was out of the league.
It's still
he retired.
It's still, you know, it's still June 3rd. I think Pete Carroll can maximize Eddie Lacy's value here, and if used properly. Like I said, in the sixth round, it's somebody I'm going to strongly consider.
I get it. Good stuff today from Matt Modica. You can catch at CTM Baseball, and he's on every week on the road, on every day on the Roto Experts in the morning, Monday through Saturday. George, you can listen to on Old School Fantasy, but he joins me here every Saturday and Sunday. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll add Tony Cicada into the mix tomorrow to talk some baseball DFS, and he's next with Cha-Cha after that weekend fantasy update. Thanks for listening today. We'll talk to you tomorrow from 8 to 10. We're out for the day on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.